Thank you very much, and good morning. Thanks for coming out. Can we have our students that are here stand up for just a minute? All right, just a couple left, huh? No, thanks. It's great to have you here, and as I make this presentation, it's really designed primarily for you. Now, everybody who's not a student is welcome to stay and listen, too, but it's really designed for you. You know, I was thinking last night, as I was going over my notes, what this society has done for me, and it's done a lot. It's where I found my graduate school. It's where I did interviews to find my career. And it was about 28 years ago that I gave my first presentation here at an ASA meeting. And it's hard to imagine that almost 30 years has passed since that time. But I'm in a role now where I have global responsibilities for the plant breeding activities at Pioneer. And it brings you to a different level of understanding about what some of the global needs are. And what I want to share with you today are some of my perspectives on that and some of the activities that we are undertaking in Pioneer and DuPont to meet some of the global challenges as the population continues to grow and trying to do that in a sustainable way. I'm going to talk a little bit about the challenges, the global challenges. I'm also going to share with you the results of a committee that DuPont commissioned to take a look at this future challenge and what they recommend that all of us do together to fight the battle of food hunger. And then I'm going to wrap up with some of the specific things that we're doing at our company to meet those demands. If you think about what we're doing as a company, DuPont is really focused on what we call three megatrends. Those megatrends are feeding the world, reducing our dependence on fossil fuels, and keeping people and the environment safe. Obviously, the Pioneer business of DuPont is extremely focused on that first megatrend, keeping the world fed by improving productivity. But we know we can't do it alone. We have to do it through collaborations, and we have to think about agricultural systems. And as you think about what you do in your careers, I challenge you to think about how you dedicate part of your work towards meeting these global needs. As we think about dependence on fossil fuels, it's just amazing the amount of crop that now is going into things like biodiesel and ethanol. You know, nearly 40% of U.S. corn grain is going into ethanol today, a major change and a major withdrawal from our system of supplies. Keeping people in the environment safe in a DuPont context, it's more about Kevlar vests for police officers and Nomex suits for firefighters. But even there, the work that we do as agronomists and the work that I do with my team of plant breeders is helping to keep that environment safe. Because as we improve productivity per hectare, it allows us to keep some of the natural environment from being converted to agricultural land. Many of you know the challenge that's out there. Today we have about 7 billion people on the planet to feed. And by 2050, that's expected to rise to 9 billion people. And if you think about that difference of 2 billion people, it's about equal to the total world population in the early part of the 19th century. So that's a lot of extra mouths to feed. In addition to that, we have growth in the economies of Asia. And as that happens and individuals get more personal income, one of the first things they do with that income is they upgrade their food intake. And a lot of folks, especially in China, are starting to demand more meat in their diet. And as more meat demand increases, it also increases the demands for grains like corn and soy. So those things together, along with the demand for converting some of these crop streams into biofuels, is creating really high demand. There's a term called the world stocks to use ratio, which is basically a measure of the supply of grain that's in the system today and how long that would last if the supply into that system stopped. And it's about half of the long-term rate right now, about 6 or 7% in the U.S. for corn and soy, which equates to about a 2 or 3 week supply in the system. And it's also creating higher commodity prices, which our farmers don't mind, but higher commodity prices and a lot more volatility in that market. And if you look at the growth demands going from the 7 billion people today to the 9 billion people that are expected to be on the planet in 2050, and you also consider that the estimates by those who are studying this topic suggest that the amount of land going into agriculture production is not going to change that much, there's an estimate that we'll need to increase that productivity by 70% between now and 2050. So that is the challenge. And for those of you who are students out there, as you decide to find places in agronomy to serve your careers, that is the challenge that will be left to you. But it's also a challenge that many people in this room have taken on in the past 20, 30, 40, 50 years and met. And if you look back 50 years, we have doubled the productivity of North American corn, and we have increased substantially the productivity of North American soybeans. So it is possible, but there are a lot of challenges in front of us. Jim Burrell, who's our senior vice president, he oversees not only Pioneer but our crop protection business, said that he believes that agriculture is one of the biggest innovation challenges that we'll have in our century. You know, it's not just about increasing food, but it's also about increasing nutrition. And it's not just about meeting the needs of the large farmers in North America, but it's about meeting the needs of small landholders throughout many of the developing parts of the world. These are the sort of challenges that are out there that haven't been well met in the past that we're trying to take on as a business. And at the same time, we always have to keep in mind that as we try to improve the productivity of our crops, we also have to think about sustainability, because the planet can only withstand so much abuse. If you look at the distribution of population and production today, this tells a story that many of us are familiar with. In the developed world, our population is about 2.1, 2.2 billion people, and our production is up about 1.8 billion metric tons. So in the developed world, which is basically North America, parts of the developed part of Latin America and Europe, those areas are producing the majority of the crops, and these particular commodity crops would include corn, rice, wheat, and soybeans. They're producing the major part of the crops, but the major part of the population is in the developing world. And as we look towards 2050, that trend really continues. The greatest gains in productivity are expected in the developed world, whereas the largest increases in population are anticipated in the developing world. So one of the challenges that we're faced with is how do we get food from the places where grains are produced to those countries that need it the most? This is a challenge beyond an agronomist, beyond a guy who works for Pioneer. This is about collaborating with governments and opening trade. And another thing to keep in mind is that many of the advancing technologies that we use today have not really penetrated the small farmers who control so much of the agricultural production in smaller parts of the world. Again, another challenge for us as we move forward. Well, now it's going backwards. Let's see. I have it on my left and not my right, so the left becomes the right, and I'll get there eventually. Here we go. I put this chart in, and actually it got more confusing than it was 2 weeks ago. There's a group called the Global Harvest Initiative, and they put out what they call a gap report. And they have estimated the productivity gains that we need on an annual basis to meet this goal of improving our productivity by 70% over the next 30, 40 years. And that target is 1.75% productivity gains on an annual basis. Last year, they put out an estimate in 2010 of what we're currently at, and they estimate we're at 1.4%. So we were a little bit shy last year. But somebody in this room or a group of you in this room must have done an amazing job, because their new report, which came out 3 days ago, says that our new productivity rate is 1.74, which is right on target to meet the needs. So congratulations to all of you for that work. Now, when you look at the report a little bit deeper, it says, well, these numbers vary from year to year. So I think maybe we're not quite at 1.74 yet. And the other number I want to point out is that bottom line, and that is the productivity growth in sub-Saharan Africa, and that's at 0.8. So again, one of the challenges is to take a lot of the productivity that we've been able to develop in the developing world, in the developed world, and move it to other parts of the globe. About a year ago, DuPont commissioned a group to take a look at these issues and make some recommendations back to Pioneer on how to improve agricultural innovation. That group was led by Tom Daschle, who's a former senator from South Dakota, and also served as majority and minority House leaders, and has some other interesting and very talented individuals on it as well, including Charlotte Hedebrand, who is a former CEO of International Food and Trade Policy Council, and also a former European Commission Special Advisor. It had J.B. Penn, who's an economist at Deere & Company. It had Pedro Sanchez, who's the Director of Tropical Ag and Rural Environment Program, and also Director of Millennium Villages Project at the Earth Institute at Columbia University. And it had Joe Luck, who's a CEO and President of Heifer International, which is a group that really works on alleviating hunger throughout the world, and also a winner of the World Food Prize in 2010. So this group got together and spent 6 to 9 months really studying these issues, and they've made a number of recommendations that I thought I'd share with you today. That recommendation number one is that as you think about how to resolve these issues, you really need to focus on the farmer. And this is actually, this was good news to us, because this is one of the things that Pioneer does really well as a business. We really focus on farmer needs. We really try to connect directly with those growers. And it's more than just dropping off a bag of seed, but it's working with the growers to position those hybrids and varieties on specific soils, and to understand their operations, provide additional support services to make their operations profitable. And what they concluded is that all farmers benefit from investment in extension and education and best practices. They benefit from public research, and we need to increase public research to ensure that growers are gaining information and knowledge from all available sources. And farmers also benefit from collaborations that occur across different sectors of our business. If you think about Africa, I've had a chance to work in Africa a little bit. And one of the challenges in Africa is they have an effort underway to enable small landholders to get more involved in agriculture by taking some of the larger farms as they pass generations and splitting them up and passing them to small farmer holders in order to bring their status up, their economic status up. One of the challenges in the system, though, is that the extension service is not what it needs to be. So these are challenges that are out there. These are real challenges. And companies like ours are actually trying to take up some of the slack in those systems. If you think about additional focus for the development world, there are a lot of areas out there that we can work on. Certainly technology and best practices, moving those into some of the developing countries. Private and public collaboration on indigenous crop investments. There's a group now that's working on an initiative that they're calling orphan crops, and saying, is there a way we can take some of these orphan crops, which are typically crops that are important in some of these developing countries, but they're not the major four or five crops of the world that get all the money and investment. Can we take some of those orphan crops, and can we link scientists in some of those international locations with our best scientists and leverage some of the technologies that we have to bring up the productivity of those orphan crops? We have a lot of need also for creating collaborations for credit options and financing, particularly for small farmers. Again, one of the challenges for the small farmers, a lot of them are operating in a subsistence basis, and they don't have access to credit to buy good seed and to buy the inputs that they need to have a highly productive system. So that's another area that we're trying to work on in Asia and into Africa. And then improved infrastructure. You know, moving grain from storage to market access is tough. And it's estimated by a number of studies that almost 30% of what's produced in this world never makes it to the mouth of an individual because it rots if it's a fruit or a vegetable. Or the grain molds because there's inadequate storage facilities. You know, perhaps that's another area we should think about a little bit more as we go forward and determine if there are ways that we can improve that storage capability. Now, Pioneer has been working on programs like this. I'll just give you an example. We've joined up with a group called Access Development Services, and this is in India, and really try to begin working together to serve small farmers in India. We actually have 2 million customers in India. Think about that. Now, India has 500 million farmers based on an internet search I did recently, so it looks like our market share is pretty small. But that's not necessarily true because a lot of times what we consider a customer is actually a village of farmers. And the 500 million includes the husband and the wife and the kids. But we're trying to work to enable small farmers to gain access to credit and to pool their resources so they get a better deal, not only in the inputs, but they have better access to the downstream markets. In this particular project, we're aligning these growers with the poultry producers so they can sell their crops direct to the poultry producers and get a much better price for their crop. And we're also starting to figure out how you take technology and you move it from a handful of individuals that represent our company to 2 million customers in the country. And it's basically a train-the-trainer type process where we identify individuals within the village who are leaders and bring them in, give them agronomic training, and ask them to pass that training on to the other members of their village. So let me talk a little bit about what Pioneer is doing as a company and talk a little bit about technology. And I'm really honored to represent our research team at Pioneer. We have more than 3,000 folks in Pioneer doing research. Our total business is around 11,000 full-time employees. So to think that nearly 30% of our employees are involved in research is pretty amazing to me. I can't think of many other businesses where that's the case. These 3,000 employees are located at over 110 locations in 24 countries around the world. And our goal is to leverage that global knowledge base, but of course, to be successful in plant breeding, we have to be doing it in the specific environments and breed for the local diseases and pests and breed for the local environment and the local soil types. And that's been one of the keys to our success. And then it's about bringing technology and reducing it to practice. And one of the areas that we've worked on as we think about the rest of the world is how do we leverage the technologies that we've developed for corn and soybeans in the United States and leverage it to other parts of the world. One of the ways you do that is by putting plant breeders in the other parts of the world, and we've had a lot of expansion in that zone. We've also benefited quite a bit from the use of molecular markers, and I was really fortunate to be on one of the early teams in Pioneer who really put molecular markers into commercial scale for the first time in soybean. But now we're leveraging it to other crops like sunflower and rice and cotton and canola and moving those marker capabilities all around our global network system. We're actually developing molecular marker labs in many of our international locations as well. Biotechnology trait development is another technology that certainly needs to be leveraged more. Obviously, most of the early biotechnology traits were developed with a North American market in mind, the herbicide tolerance and the insect resistance. We've done a fairly good job of leveraging that technology into Latin America, and we've also leveraged the technology into a few other locations around the world like South Africa and several countries in Asia. But there's more to do, and there's more work to do, and there's other issues besides just the technology. Obviously, there are a lot of political issues to work through in terms of acceptance. And then in terms of doing research, we do need to prove the products on a local basis. And we do need to address both the large farmer needs as well as the small farmer needs. And I spoke about one of those efforts a few moments ago. And we need to provide education. And we need to offer agronomic services so that it's, again, not just receiving the seed, but you learn how to use the seed, how to place the seed in the particular farm that you have, and the management practices that go along with that. I'll talk just a second or two about our molecular marker systems. And, you know, we started off basically using these systems to track individual genes for disease and pest resistance. And we've extended that, again, as I said, to many of the crops around the world. As we go into the very near future, we're expanding that scope to look at much more complex genetic systems, looking at traits like yield and drought tolerance, which are controlled by dozens, if not hundreds, of genes that interact in very complex ways. We're investing in bioinformatics in order to try to figure out how those genes work together and enable the breeders actually to predict hybrid yields and varietal yields. And we're having some success there. And I think this sort of technology will also be leveraged to many corners of the globe. I'll also give you another example, one of drought tolerance. And as we look forward to the future, we have some other issues too. We have potential for impending climate change. And some of the projections there indicate that, if nothing else, the world might be a little more erratic. Certain areas that are in production today are going to get drier, and water is going to be a key issue for that. We've been utilizing a multi-pronged approach for drought tolerance, using both native trait approaches with the use of molecular markers, as well as biotechnology approaches to try to look at some of the pathways that control tolerance to drought and try to modify those. This is a task that's not easy. We have established a number of drought screening locations that are specifically set up for that purpose, starting in places like Sacramento, the California, and Woodland, California, where it's basically a desert, and you can control the rain at all the various stages of crop development. We established another nursery down in Santiago, Chile, which has similar conditions. And in the past 3 or 4 years, we've put a number of these additional locations throughout the drier parts of the Midwest and the Mid-South. But drought is complex. There are different stages of plant development where drought can impact your yields, whether it's the flowering stage or whether it's at the grain filling stage. And each of those types of drought tolerance really have different genetic mechanisms that lead to tolerance. So it is a challenge, but we are making good progress. We did release this year a number of new hybrids under a new marketing banner called Aquamax, which have better performance under drought conditions. We're also looking at nitrogen. You know, nitrogen is one of several nutrients that we think are going to be limiting as we go forward. And nitrogen probably mostly because of the cost and the energy, but there's also rumors floating around about the availability of phosphorus long term. So we need to look at these sort of situations as well and involve our soil science experts in these pursuits. We are also here taking a multi-pronged approach, looking at are there ways to take native genetics and use molecular markers to stack genes together to give better nitrogen utilization efficiency? And are there biotechnology approaches that can give us better nitrogen utilization efficiency? The photo on the top right shows a transgenic event in early stages of discovery, the one that's a completely green leaf compared to a normal leaf in a specific nursery set up to measure nitrogen deficiency. Now, how about for the rest of us? We've talked a lot about the part of the world that's short of food and the developing world. There's about a billion people today that they say are short of food, face possible starvation. But there's also a billion people on the planet that are more like us, and they overeat. So we're also developing solutions for people like us, trying to improve nutrition. One of the best examples that I have is the Plenish High Oleic soybeans, which are planned to be launched in 2012, which modify an oil profile, make soybean oil more like olive oil, make it more heart healthy, make it more stable in high temperature food processes. So we're attacking that side of the curve as well. And then going over into new crops, we've spent a lot of time and resources in the past 4 or 5 years expanding our technology into new crops. One of our largest ventures is in rice, and it's really focused primarily now on India, but we also have research going on in Thailand, the Philippines, and Vietnam. Hybrid rice occupies a relatively small percentage of the acreage in India. And what we're really targeted on is trying to understand the basis of heterosis in rice so that we can consistently produce rice hybrids that are higher yielding than the varietal rices that are in the market today. And in doing this, we're collaborating with a number of organizations, including IRI, the International Rice Research Institute, the China National Hybrid Rice Research and Development Center, and the Indonesian Center for Rice Research. So this is a great example of collaborations across organizations to improve productivity of rice throughout Asia. This is my final slide on collaborations. And, you know, obviously most of our collaborations are in the United States. That's where our highest intensity of collaborations are. But we do have a number of collaborations outside of the U.S., and some of them are focused on some of the issues that we've talked about this morning. So I want to share some of those that we're championing at Pioneer. The first is what's called the IMAS program, or the Improved Maize for African Soils. And the target of this particular program is to improve maize yields for sub-Saharan African farmers who are growing crops on fairly poor soils and are always short of access to fertilizers, and also they have limited availability of improved hybrids. So we're working to create a solution for them. This is in a partnership with a number of organizations, including CIMMYT and the Kenya Agricultural Research Institute. It's funded by USAID and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, so it's working in partnership to create this particular solution. We're also, what we're doing is providing a lot of the technologies, including our work on nitrogen utilization efficiency, and we're also bringing scientists in from Africa to train with Pioneer scientists to enable them to take some of those knowledge ideas back to their own countries to work towards solutions. Another one is the African Biofortified Sorghum Project. And we don't think about sorghum as a feed or as a food here, but in much of Africa, it is used as a primary food. And one of the issues with sorghum as a food is that there are vitamin deficiencies like provitamin A. And there are also issues with iron and zinc availability that can be resolved by modifying the phytate in the grain. So again, this has been funded by Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and more recently by the Howard Buffett Foundation. We're really fortunate because Howard Buffett is one of our customers in Illinois. He's a large farmer, and of course he's related to the other famous Buffett in Omaha. So he has a foundation. He was willing to pick up support for this particular project. And again, we're bringing scientists in from Africa, training them on our technologies, and then providing some of our technology to try to improve the nutritional value of sorghum in Africa. So that's a kind of a sub-sample, a quick overview of some of the things that Pioneer and DuPont are doing around the world. And there are ways to get this goal accomplished. We need to think about developing local solutions. We need to take the knowledge that we've developed and leverage it to other places around the world. We do need to collaborate and create new ideas. And I don't think any of us can do it alone if we work in a silo. We really have to work together to meet this goal. And with that, I think we can secure a sustainable food supply for our planet. So with that, thank you very much for coming this morning. I hope I've instilled some things in you. And for you new grad students, and folks that are looking to get into agronomy, I wish that you have just as exciting as a career as I've had for the past 30 years. It's a wonderful place to be. And thank you very much again. Have a good day.
Well, on behalf of American Society of Agronomy, I thank Dr. Soper for his very outstanding presentation, and we have a small token of appreciation. American Society of Agronomy recognizes John Soper as a distinguished scholar representing the 2011 E.T. and Van Muyork Distinguished ASA Lectureship funded through the Agronomic Science Foundation. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
This time I have Neil Kitchen come up for his presidential address.
Well, we've been here for quite a while this morning, and I know, at least for some of you, I'm a very poor substitute for a second cup of coffee. And so I'm going to try to keep this short. But there are a couple of thoughts that I have that I would like to share with you. I think it's very important for us to kind of merge our thinking together for where we are today. Go ahead. Do I need to do it from here? Okay. Oh, I just went. Thank you.